Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome everyone of you listening to us live from West Africa and all over the world. My name is Assumpta Latus and here are our main stories. The African Union issues an ultimatum to Burkina Faso Army.
As soon as this happened in Burkina Faso, they've made a statement already. And what was the statement? It's the statement of the fact that they want to see Burkina Faso return to democracy.
We will also be going to Liberia and witness how young Liberians turn to social media while avoiding contracting the Ebola virus.
Right now, the preferred way of keeping connected is via social media. Nobody want to go visit somebody right now.
And you might find this a bit peculiar, but it's true that yoga is increasingly gaining popularity amongst Kenyans.
Top story.
The African Union has given the military regime in Burkina Faso 2 weeks to return power to civilians or face sanctions. This comes as the African Union Peace and Security Department meets in Harare, Zimbabwe. The AU is working towards establishing a standby force which can be deployed to states in crisis such as Mali and the Central African Republic. As Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, the unrest in Burkina Faso presents a strong argument for an AU standby force.
General Samaila Ilia is leading the process of ensuring that an African standby force is ready by April next year. He told me that the African Union Commission was closely monitoring the situation in Burkina Faso, where the army has usurped power since Friday. This was after the country's president, Blaise Compaoré, succumbed to demonstrations for him not to extend his 27-year rule.
Actually, African Union has moved a lot. Right from the time it became an African Union, it has been proactive. As soon as this happened in Burkina Faso, they've made a statement already. And what was the statement? It's the statement of the fact that they want to see Burkina Faso return to democracy.
Turning to the African standby force, General Ilia, a Nigerian national, said the two-week training in Harare was part of the Amani plan. Amani means peace in Kiswahili, which is spoken in Kenya, Tanzania, and in some parts of Rwanda and Uganda. But why an African standby force? I put that to General Ilia.
The African standby force is actually a part of the peace and security architecture, as you know it. It's an architecture that is owned by Africans themselves, so that in case there's any issues that have to border on peace and security, you can actually make use of that capability.
The standby force will have standby arrangements based across the continent. The European Union is bankrolling the exercise to ensure that the African standby force becomes a reality. I asked EU's Colonel Anton Gash why Brussels was so keen on supporting the creation of the standby force in Africa.
We think that delivering full operational capability will be historic because it will allow Africa to make its own decisions, set its own priorities, respond to situations on its continent. Not on its own, because the existence of the Africa Standby Force doesn't mean that the outside world stops helping, but it gives that extra element of autonomy, independent action, and the ability to respond rapidly.
Delays in implementing the African Standby Force has resulted in countries like Mali and the Central African Republic requesting French intervention to tackle crises in their respective countries. Now, with the hope that the African standby force will become a reality in less than a year, African countries will no longer need to beg their former colonial masters for military interventions.
Columbus Mavunga in Harare. Burkina Faso's transitional leader, Colonel Isaac Tsida, on Monday promised a democratic power handover within 3 months. He has formed a committee comprising representatives of opposition, civil society, religious and traditional groups to work out a formula to restoring civilian rule. James Amadeka is a political commentator in Ouagadougou. He has been telling Crispin Makideo how far the transition process has reached.
People are going going about their activities normally, like before. The opposition leaders are meeting the military leader of the transitional team, Colonel Isaac Zida. Now, the transition team is supposed to be led by the military, but they have now agreed that it moves from military health to the civilians. And the civilians should lead the transitional team until elections are organized in very immediate future. And the suspension ban also slapped on the Burkinabe constitution was lifted. Religious leaders, customary leaders, that is traditional chiefs, have also met the king of the Musi kingdom, which is the Moro Naba. And they were led by Juan Blase Wedrabo, a former MP, current leader of one political party called Fasu Otroma.
And what can you tell us about the nighttime curfew?
The nighttime curfew has also been relaxed. Now being shifted from 12 midnight to 5 a.m. in the morning.
And how are people coping with that? Are they having any trouble to move around?
No, there's no problem at all. The security agencies have no problem at all. Generally, Ouagadougou is a very entertaining town, but they are complying to the curfew hours. So there's no problem for them at all in controlling the population.
And how united is the representatives of the opposition in this process of transition?
Very, very united. In fact, they are also all believed to be fighting for one cause. They are very united in that direction.
You mentioned that the representatives of the religious groups, traditional groups, and civil society groups have all been included in this transition process. What about the supporters of ousted President Blaise Compaoré?
Well, in fact, there's no sign of support of Blaise Compaoré. If there are any at all, they'd hit him. So there's no obvious sign of anybody supporting Blaise Compaoré. Everybody has unanimously agreed on his departure.
Do people trust the military when they say that they will hand over power in the next few months when elections are held?
Well, a small section of the population believe that they can handle it and then hand over when the time comes. But the majority do not trust them, especially when the leader, Isaac Zida, is from presidential security regime, means a member of the Blaise Compaoré presidential security regime. So all the people are calling, all the majority of the population are calling for handover to the civilian to lead the transitional team. In fact, majority do not trust the military.
Political commentator James Amadeka speaking from Ouagadougou there. You're listening to Africa Link live from Bonn.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
We are moving to Nigeria now, where a suicide bombing at a Shiite ceremony on Monday killed at least 25 people. The attack happened in Yobe, northeastern Nigeria. In a separate incident, more than 130 inmates were set free after gunmen staged a daring prison break in Lokojo. These incidents have underscored the worsening security crisis in Nigeria. They have also cast further doubt on government claims that a ceasefire was in place to end 5 years of Boko Haram insurgency. Crispin Makideo has been speaking to Mohammed Alamin about the aftermath of the suicide bombing in Yobe.
Kam has returned to Potiskum, which is the second largest town in Yobe State after the state capital, Damaturu. People are back to their normal business. A Yobe State government official confirmed that 27 people, including women and children, were killed in the bomb attack, as confirmed by the Yobe State Islamic Movement of Nigeria leader called Shia. He also confirmed to me that 26 to 27 people were killed as a result of that attack. I spoke to Abdullahi Bego, the spokesman of the Yobe State governor.
The governor of Yobe State, His Excellency Governor Ibrahim Gedem, has condemned the attack as callous and heinous and barbaric. And his thoughts are with the families of victims at this time of great loss. And he has called on the people of Potiskum, people all across the state, to remain calm and to remain vigilant and to continue to pray for the restoration of peace and security.
Alamin, we understand that there was another bomber who was arrested before he could detonate the explosives. What more can you tell us about this other bomber?
A man was arrested at the scene, but it was not confirmed whether he had any plan of detonating another bomb. There was no official statement to that effect.
We understand that some witnesses also say that the military started shooting immediately and indiscriminately after the first explosion. What more have you learned about this?
Yes, it is true there was a shooting by the military. The leader of the group in Yobe State, Mustafa Lawal Nasidi, alleged that armed soldiers came to the scene of the bomb, opened fire on the crowd. You know, initially, The general leader of the Islamic Movement of Nigeria, Sheikh Ibrahim Elezeziki, has alleged in an interview that he uncovered plans by the Nigerian military to attack the Ashura procession scheduled to halt on Monday in Daria and other cities. So one cannot conclude what actually happens.
Has there been any claims of responsibility or any group like Boko Haram or any other group saying, yeah, we are the ones behind this suicide bombing?
As I'm talking to you, none of the group that claimed the responsibility of this attack, but the leader of the Islamic Movement of Nigeria in Yobe State, Mustafa Alawal Nasidi, alleged that it was planned by some people, but he did not conclude it is the Boko Haram or any other group.
Mohammed Alamin in northeastern Nigeria.
Africa on the move.
In the US and other Western countries, yoga is a huge industry. The ancient practice, which originated in India, is spreading fast as people seek ways of dealing with stress in a rapidly changing world. Well, one of yoga's newest markets is Kenya, where a growing number of yoga studios have started in the last few years. Tanya Kessel with this report on how yoga is gaining popularity in Nairobi and providing income to those who teach it.
It's Saturday morning at the Africa Yoga Project's Shine Studio in Nairobi, Kenya. More than 100 women, men, boys, and girls are crammed into an 8,000 square foot space practicing yoga, their bodies on mats just inches apart. Sweat drips off their face as they are guided through various poses. Until recently, only a handful of trendy expatriates and South Asian devotees practiced yoga in Kenya. But the Africa Yoga Project, started in 2007, is taking yoga mainstream. It has trained more than 90 teachers and offers free classes every week at its newly established studio in a popular Nairobi suburb. This morning's class is just one of 350 offered throughout the week by the project's teachers. Most take place in slums, at schools, community centers, or even on the streets. Moses Mukulwe Mabaya is 32 years old and is one of the first teachers trained by the Africa Yoga Project. He says yoga has given him the tools to be gainfully self-employed.
Yeah, I can say economically, like financially, it has moved me. There is a step ahead which I've made through yoga. I'm teaching in different institutions right now. I own a space, my own space, where students usually come on a day-to-day basis. So yoga has moved me a bit in a very good way.
Moses is one of dozens of teachers that are able to earn a living through teaching yoga. This is the goal, says Paige Ellison, the founder of the Africa Yoga Project.
I started Africa Yoga Project because I saw an opportunity to make a difference around youth unemployment in Africa.
The physical and mental benefits of yoga are recognized across the world. Moses says that yoga not only provided him with economic opportunities, but also gave him the tools to deal with his anger.
I used to get angry very quickly. Now I don't. It's better to have a conversation and just say, hey, you are hurting me in this area in a good way, like in a proper way. Have a conversation with this person and just move on forward.
For devotees and aficionados, yoga is seen as an effective antidote to the stresses of modern life. It is also proven to help fight everything from addiction, lower back pain, diabetes, and aging. Moses says he's seen the benefits of yoga on his students.
Right now, I mostly focus in elderly people, people who have injuries, chronic diseases like back pain, headaches, abdominal pains.
Paige says Moses' teaching is about more than economics and health. It's about hope.
Yeah, I would say Moses is a great success story for our projects. When I met Moses, he was an acrobat. He was involved in gang violence and criminal and was really living, you know, job to job and meal to meal. And he started through our training program, and we sent him to Mexico to get an advanced level of teacher training. He graduated from our program. Had the way he describes himself as someone who, when you walk down the street, you'd want to walk the other way, like a scary kid. And to now, he's a real pillar of hope in his community.
Age predicts the wellness industry in Kenya will be worth $1 billion in the future. And meanwhile, yoga will continue to change Moses' life and others like him.
Peace to all, love to all, light to you all. Namaste.
Tanya Castle in Nairobi. Social media is getting more popular among young Liberians as they cope with the Ebola virus. Residents have become wary of making physical contact with one another as the virus is known to spread through contact with bodily fluids of an infected person. So what to do if you wish to socialize and keep contact? Julius Kanuba has more from Monrovia.
At the VitalTech Internet Cafe in central Monrovia, Darlington Mika is busy. His Facebook page is wide open and visible. Interestingly, he is updating his page dedicated to informing his friends and followers about Ebola in Liberia. Like for many young Liberians, this internet cafe has become Mika's virtual meeting point. By using social media, Michael has been able to communicate, network, and even learn from others.
I use it regularly, very regularly. In a day, I use it more than five times. I visit the cafe more than four or five times to use the social media on Facebook or Twitter.
Janet Fala and Princess Young Kendall are also social media fans. They say they use Facebook to easily connect with friends and families amid the prolonged Ebola nightmare.
I've talked with my friends, family, all of Liberia and in Monrovia.
Facebook is all about connection, connecting your friends. Like if I all travel and you want to see them, the shorter way to see them, you just ask them for their address and then you check for them, you see them. And the more you see them, you feel happy.
Cesar Morris is a Liberian social entrepreneur and experienced information technology professional who operates the Art Cafe in Monrovia. He says the internet traffic of Facebook use in Liberia has increased since the outbreak of the Ebola virus disease. This outreach, he added, is even more than what the traditional media, radio and television provide in Liberia.
Facebook traffic has been the highest traffic that we have monitored. 8 out of every 10 person that walk through our doors uses Facebook. It has been the one media that have crossed boundaries, that have gone beyond where the radio will reach, where the TV will go. It have crossed boundaries and kept people informed and together.
A huge number of Liberians prefer to be online than risking their lives to mingle in the streets or in their communities, insisted Cesar Morris.
Right now, the preferred way of keeping connected is via social media. Nobody want to go visit somebody right now. I mean, in fact, it is a part of the measure of health procedure right now that there should be a cut down in visitation. So the only thing that keeping us together, that keeping us connected, is through the social media.
That report was compiled by Julius Kanuba in Monrovia.
Making a difference.
Ghana's creative industry is facing lots of challenges. Among them are lack of the necessary financial support and the domination of male artists, which threatens to drown talented females. But one young female poet, Ama Asantewa Diaka, is making a difference with her spoken word performance. She now wants to train more young girls to take up the spoken word as a career. As a Kaleji was privileged to witness Asantewa in action and filed this report.
Poetry lovers gather in this small compound of the Nebuke Foundation in one of Ghana's splash residential areas, East Legon. They are listening to various arts performances from young and talented Ghanaians. These performances are held annually to commemorate an arts festival which organizers refer to as a halakasa. is the local name referring to songs and speeches forming an inspiration that drives lovers of poetry.
Dr. Kwame Nkrumah said something. He said, forever, backwards never. But I don't side with that.
Performances including dancing, singing, and spoken words captivate audiences through the sessions. Most inspiring and thought-provoking performances came from a young lady called Ama Asantewaa Diaka, but known as Poetra Asantewaa on stage. Her spoken words performance was captivating, touching on many themes confronting women in a men's dominated world.
Let's pretend that you are freshly brewed wine and I, a thirsty traveler, I will drink you in.
Ama is 26 years and a university graduate. She tells me how she got into the poetry.
Well, I started off as an ordinary poet. I was writing, and until a friend invited me to an event here. And I came for one, and so I thought, well, I can do this. And so I tried it, and the beauty about words is that you write something for yourself, and then you come on stage and perform it, and then somebody completely relates to what you are doing. So it made me passionate about the whole art, and since then I've never looked back. Pretty much everything influences me. I write about women, I write about feminism, I write about the economy, I write about government, I write about relationships, I write about people. So my environment basically influences my writing.
It has been challenging for Asantewaa, but rewarding, as she tells me of her globe-trotting expedition to sell her artworks.
I have performed on almost all the stages in Accra or in Ghana. I've been on all the TV shows. I have been at the big events, corporate events. And last year I was in Uganda as one of the only women from Ghana to represent the country in a FemRight. So it's taking me to places I didn't imagine it to take me. Gradually, it's opening up and people will listen to you because you have something to say, not just because you're a woman.
And we both know the only reason I move slow is because I want you to taste the fire in my hips.
Audiences are inspired by this performance by Asantewaa's talent at making good use of words through poetry.
I think her performance was okay. It was nice. It's deep. But I like the way she put everything. I mean, it was basically about women, sex, but it was well-coded.
There's content, there's style, there's presentation all packaged in one. And I think she's one of the best poets, undoubtedly, that we have in the country.
Poetry's performance is phenomenal. I think she knows how to play with words, and she knows how to conjure imagery to make you travel into the setting of her performances. And that is one thing I love about her works.
But Asantewaa is not satisfied with governmental support to the industry. The young designer, who owns a clothing line, the Alikoto Clothing, hopes to also expand her career in the arts to live a fulfilled life.
So the perception has to change. It's a challenge, but I hope to take this. I hope to one day be making money off just writing, because that is who I am. I have had quite a number of people, women, girls, surprisingly, coming up to me and saying, I love what you did there. How can I do this? I write. So it's a cycle. So I learned from somebody and somebody's learning from me. So I hope this goes as far as possible.
Young talents like Asantewaa yearn for support to develop and sell their work to Ghana and the entire world. The question is when that significant help will come.
Our correspondent Isaac Kaleji in Accra. And now a summary of what we have been covering. The African Union has given the military regime in Burkina Faso 2 weeks to return power to civilians or face sanctions. A suicide bombing at a Shi'ite ceremony has killed at least 25 people in Yobe, northeastern Nigeria. We have also been hearing how Liberians are turning to social media as a way of staying in touch while avoiding contracting the Ebola virus. That's it for today. Africa Link will be back at the same time tomorrow. For comments and suggestions, send us a text message to +491609575 9510 or an email to feedback.africa@dw.de or a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. Till tomorrow, I'm Assumpta Latos. Thanks for listening.